Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. We are, you know, things are starting to warm up a little bit here on Hoth. It was downright chilly for a few days, but the sun's come out. It's warmed up a little bit, and we're happy to be back here with you. I'm Eric. I'm joined tonight by Lou and Chris. Lou, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
All right. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well.
All right. Everybody is well. Not great, but we're well.
You know, I've noticed, so as we get closer to the celebration, Chris is less down and more upbeat. That's good.
That's true.
Yeah, I just got my plane ticket this week, so.
Nice. Awesome. Okay, that's a good thing. All right, well, we have kind of a special episode this week because we have a guest who is also another podcaster, though not a Star Wars podcaster. So we're kind of crossing the streams here, if you will. From the Signcast, we have Matt. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for being on with us. So we know you're a big Star Wars fan.
Big Star Wars fan, yes.
Excellent. Well, that's the best kind to be. But before we get into that, why don't you give us a brief rundown about the Signcast?
Oh, for sure. Well, Signcast is a podcast that I host with an old college buddy of mine named Vinny. And we've been huge Seinfeld fans since the day we met, like, God, 12, 13 years ago. And we decided a couple of years ago to create a podcast where each week we discuss an episode of Seinfeld, and we're going in airdate order. So we've been doing it for about, I don't know, almost 3 years now. And we are about to wrap up season 7. And how do you fill an hour and a half of talking about Seinfeld each week? A lot of rambling and long-winded discussion, but we discuss casting and behind-the-scenes trivia and cool. Just all the minutiae, nitty-gritty of each Seinfeld episode. And wouldn't you know it, we've gotten a lot of support because apparently, like Star Wars fans out there, Seinfeld fans are diehards, and they love all of the little details in each episode. So that's
awesome.
It.
That's really cool. Well, and of course, Seinfeld is kind of... It's carved its own niche into the history of sitcoms. So whether you like it or not, it's unique, it stands out, and it definitely has a rabid fan following.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, it's really appropriate that we're recording this episode of Echo Base this week because we will be releasing an episode called the Calzone on Thursday. And in that episode, Elaine dates a guy who makes a bet with her that he knows he will lose. And the bet is that Dustin Hoffman was in Star Wars. and it becomes this long discussion, like short Jewish guy against Darth Vader. I don't think so. And I just thought it was really appropriate that I think for the most part, the only Star Wars reference on Seinfeld is this week's episode.
Well, see, that's fortuitous. That's mm-hmm. very awesome. I was going to say, yeah,
Dustin it's a Hoffman. Sign.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right. So
I got that.
So let's jump into Star Wars then. So let's break down your history as a Star Wars. Well, first of all, before we started recording, you confessed to a rather tragic truth that I wasn't going to bring up, but it kind of spins into something else. So I guess we should. You said you've heard me before.
Oh yes, Eric. I am very familiar with your dulcet tones. I first heard you back in 2005 when I was in college at Michigan State, and I was on my way to work, and I was, you know, a daily visitor of theforce.net, and I saw there was some kind of podcast. I'm like, what's a podcast? And there was an MP3 link where you could download, you know, some guy just talking about Star Wars. And I don't know the specifics about the episode, but I'm like, heck, I think Revenge of the Sith had already come out. So I didn't really have an outlet, you know, to really like explore my Star Wars fandom and with mm-hmm. the community. So I'm like, maybe I'll check this out. And every week for, I think, at least a couple of months, I would listen to this guy, Eric, talk about Star Wars on my iPod. And it was such a delight.
I
and
am
it was
so,
my,
so
my
sorry.
First experience with podcasting. And lo and behold, it's you're the same Eric.
I'm different in some ways, but yeah, I'm that Eric.
Oh, dude. And specifically, something has stuck with me over the years, all the way till I think a couple of years ago when... I'm sorry I'm so long-winded, but it's a funny story. On the podcast, you mentioned once that guys, Vader's Star Destroyer, it's not the Executor, it's the Executor. There's no such thing as an Executor.
Right. There's an Executioner.
Yes.
And there's an Executor.
Oh my God. If my 20-year-old self could know that I'd be talking to you one day about this. So flash forward to, like, I don't know, 2012 or so, I go to this live presentation of the Comic Book Men. It's the show with Kevin Smith and his friends down in Red Bank. And they're talking about Star Wars toys. And at one point, Kevin brings up Vader's Star Destroyer, and he's stumbling over the name. And I'm really drunk. I'm sitting in the front of the audience. And I say, he said, it's called the Executor. And I corrected him live during this thing. I'm like, it's Executor.
Awesome.
There's no such thing as an Executor. And yeah, funny hijinks.
That is awesome. I've indirectly helped out Kevin Smith.
Right.
I never thought Eric's Star Wars knowledge would be of use.
Neither did I.
Absolutely. Let me tell you how you met my wife, actually.
Uh-oh. No. Yeah, no, hold on. I'm not, I only accept a certain level of responsibility here. I can't. Wow. Yeah, so now fast forward to 2017, and you've learned that I am not the celebrity that you thought I was 20 years ago.
Not at all.
Yeah, not at all. So, well, that's really cool. I'm kind of glad that you got something out of those old shows, because there wasn't much to get out of those old shows, let me tell you. But that's really cool. That makes me kind of happy that, you know, they were memorable for something other than being traumatically bad.
Oh, absolutely. You're the first one through the gate. I mean that in a big way, not only with Star Wars podcasting, but just with podcasting in general, because it just wasn't really a thing back then.
Yeah, I mean, it was
not like it is now.
Even iTunes didn't recognize podcasts. Like, Apple would not acknowledge podcasts.
Yes.
And it was a big deal. Like, a lot of us had to fight to get a podcast section in iTunes. And it was a very interesting time for podcasting back in 2005. But and to be clear, I did not know any of this until you said it, like, after we started the Skype call. Chris arranged this this appearance on the show. I'm not seeking out people who I've been traumatizing for decades now. This was an accident.
So are you going to be paying me via check, or is it PayPal? How does this work?
I thought your therapist bills me directly. I didn't think.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's what most of the therapists do. So, so welcome to Echo Base.
Thanks.
And we're glad you're here. So let's see, where should we begin from here? You know, we asked you before the show started, you know, because you're the guest, is there anything in particular that you wanted to discuss? Because, you know, you do a Seinfeld podcast, and that's not very Star Warsy, but you're a big Star Wars fan. So now you have an opportunity. Is there anything that you've been, like, dying to get off your chest? And you said, no, I'm just happy to kind of converse, because you said, how was it you put it? You said you felt like your Star Wars conversations had kind of dwindled.
Yeah, well, it's tough. My I feel like there's been, like, four stages of my fandom. You know, there's, like, the original trilogy era, the prequel trilogy era, then, like, that weird phase between 2005 and 2012, and now, like, we're in the Disney era. And I don't want to say it's waned, but I haven't been as involved with Star Wars discussion as much as I used to be, only because, I mean, people love them, they hate them. Without George Lucas really running the ship, I just don't feel as invested in the Star Wars mythos as much as I used to be. Also want to add to it that with Twitter and Facebook and blogs and podcasts, everything has been discussed by everyone, right? So
right.
It's almost like I don't even need to go after the discussion. It somehow finds its way to me. So I'm really excited to be here, because I'm really listening to three diehard Star Wars fans have, like, a normal conversation. Like, it's sort of like my first step, you know, into a larger world, as it were. Mm-hmm. And I really want to kind of, I don't know, get back into the fan community. I was telling Chris before we started recording, I haven't been to a Celebration since 2005.
Wow.
Since Celebration 3, I'm still reading the old expanded universe, the Legends universe.
Good.
Because I still haven't finished it, and it's just, like, I don't know how else to explain this, but I've just kind of, like, slowed down, and I'm trying to ramp back up in my Star Wars fandom. So,
well, so it's interesting, because I think that this may be a good topic in general, because I think that for a lot of us, the discussion has changed. For some of us, the frequency of the discussion. For some of us, the type of discussion or the nature of the discussion. It was, I remember 2005 at Celebration 3, I was talking to, for the life of me, I can't remember her name. It's right on the tip of my tongue, and I think I know her name, but I don't want to embarrass myself by getting it wrong. And not that anybody listening would know it anyway, but she was kind of in charge of, I guess, public relations for Lucasfilm at the time, and we had met at the convention. And she was walking me around and introducing me to some of the other people there at Lucasfilm, but more of the more behind the scenes people, the more executive type people, not so much like the cast and crew members and such. And I was asked, you know, what's the state of fandom right now? And I remember replying and saying, well, right now, I think people are just, they're scared that this fan property that they're so passionate about is going to disappear. You know, we're getting episode 3 here in like another month. And then what? You know, then what happens? And I remember that was kind of a time where we didn't know what the state of our fandom was going to be going forward from 2005. Now, at Celebration 3, we were promised this live-action TV series that we never did end up getting. But, you know, we were still kind of on the fence. And since then, we've had a lot of activity. But the discussions are different now, too. I mean, back then, Twitter wasn't a thing. Facebook wasn't a thing. I mean, MySpace, I think, was really more the big social network back then. And even then, that the discussions going on there were kind of different from what we see now. And now you get on Twitter, there's a lot of Star Wars activity out there, but a lot of the more prominent Star Wars Twitter accounts are more involved with the immediate issues. Either diversity within Star Wars or responding to immediate news releases or the way that the discussion happens has changed, and it's almost less like it's individual discussions and more like it's everybody in a room shouting to everybody else.
Well, I can see that.
Yeah.
So it's almost like there's a little bit less intimacy with the discussions, and I'm glad that we have a Star Wars news podcast on the network now as well, called The Outer Rim. It used to be our regular news show, but I'm glad we have that. But for me personally, I enjoy the discussions more because it's more about what we're feeling and our thoughts and our involvement on a more intimate level with the fan community. You know, we try to, when we cover news, we try to give more commentary on the news. We don't break the news. You know, everybody else is going to see it sooner on Twitter. That's just the reality of the world we live in now. But it's interesting how through social media, as well as through the changes with Disney now, how the conversations have changed. Plus, we've been getting older, too. Matt, I don't know how old you are, but you were saying you were in college back in 2005. I know now I just had my 43rd birthday recently. And this is so bad. Like last week I went to get an eye exam and I now have progressive lenses, which if you don't know what those are, that's basically like a high tech gradient form of bifocals.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
it's
like
a polite term for it.
Chris,
I'm nice. Almost feeling as old as Lou, but not quite but
you know, my eye doctor said to me at 42 and I'm like, wait, I'm only 40. He goes, yeah, I know. I'm like, bifocals, really?
Right? But, you know, as you get older, I'm married now. I have a son. My son, I'm trying to get him into Star Wars, but he's not quite getting it because the media consumption is different, too.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a lot about when I grew up and when Lou grew up, we had Star Wars, G.I. Joe, and Transformers. They were also very toy-driven franchises. And now my son and a lot of the other kids that I see him interacting with, the only toys that they play with half the time are things like, Disney Infinity is kind of gone now, but Skylanders and, you know, anything you can plug into a video game or anything that comes with an exclusive code that you can type into your mobile app. And, and yeah. It's
definitely different.
Right. And I don't know. There's just so much that keeps changing as time goes on. Are you noticing anything about, like, do you feel like the types of conversations have changed?
Well, you know, to get back to like the age thing, I'm 31, mm-hmm. right? So okay. But I definitely have grown up, I think, with like being a fan of Star Wars during all those like four phases I mentioned earlier. Of course, I wasn't there to watch them in theaters, which I regret, but you know, I still watched them, you know, at home on video all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like, God, I feel like I'm, to our younger listeners, sounding like this old man that no one can relate to, but it's just like, it seems like it's, as you put it, Eric, earlier, like it just seems like a lot of people like shouting at each other, just like their thoughts, their opinions, you know. For me, Star Wars, the fun part about Star Wars discussion is talking about like theorizing and like what right. could possibly happen, like what the bigger picture is. That's why I love the prequels so much. Like, where is this all leading? What's the bigger picture here? And I feel like it's getting boiled down to more like simple things. Like, I know you guys talked about this on your last episode, but like, who's the last Jedi? Who's Snoke? Like, it's just very like simple. You'll find out next movie. Whereas like, I don't know. I just loved the mythos. I did a lot of fan fiction back in the day.
Oh, cool.
You know, like I love the expanded universe, the novels. I just love learning more about the universe and theorizing and looking at a bigger picture as opposed to these sort of clickbait kind of discussions, I think,
right.
which yeah. mainly take over the internet. And I don't mean to be all negative here. You know what I mean? It's just sort of where I've been the past couple of years. And also, I think it's a good point. You know, as you get older, your tastes change, your perception changes a lot. But I think with most Star Wars fans, you know, big and small, there's always that love of that galaxy, and that will always like keep you coming back for more and more.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
and also maybe I have like this weird expectation because I was a very like strong supporter of the prequels when they were out. Not necessarily because I loved them, but I just hated people attacking them so much. So
yeah.
I put so much time and energy into that. I'm sort of like worn out with this next phase a little bit. I don't know.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. But, yeah. you know, I guess I never really thought about it, but I understand where you're coming from with the being worn out with the next phase thing, too, because for a lot of us who were into the expanded universe, and I applaud the fact that you're still reading them, by the way. I think more people should. If there are books out there that you haven't read, unless you really don't enjoy it, you should continue. They're still really good stories.
I'm not sure how many good ones I have left, by the way.
But... Well, that's okay. They're
I'm 14 away from finishing, and I'm currently reading the Fate of the Jedi series, which I'm not really digging, but I'm in it for the long haul. So
wow, that's now, impressive.
Have you read all of the earlier ones, like the prequel based ones? That were published later on, but happened earlier in the chronology.
Oh yeah. I'm looking at my bookcase right now. The earliest book I have yet to read is Darth Maul Lockdown. I still haven't read Kenobi yet, which
that
could be
some
inspiration
that one. Yep.
for that possible Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff. But yeah, I've got just sort of some odd ones here or there, but I'm pretty much done with the prequel era for the most part.
Okay. But, you know, it's funny now with the change in the canon, and we've talked a little bit about this before. A lot of us were Star Wars experts before, at least on some level. And now that the expanded universe is Legends and it, quote unquote, doesn't count. And there's a whole rabbit hole we could get into on that. But now that it's not relevant to the stuff going forward, it almost feels like all of that investment, all of that, the research and the knowledge, it's all, I don't want to say wasted, because it's not wasted, because we enjoyed those experiences, but it is no longer relevant to going forward. And now to have to start all over again and try to, I mean, look at The Force Awakens. In Maz's, in her castle there in that bar, almost every alien race there was something new.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know all of the ones from the cantina in A New Hope. I can tell you their names. I can tell you what they were doing that day in the cantina, thanks to the expanded universe. But now all of this stuff going forward, and in the books, it's like, wait a minute, what is that planet? And what is this alien race? And now I have to go look up what, you know, which race is that? I could probably recognize it if I saw the picture. And so now I kind of feel like what a lot of the other newcomer fans probably felt like before. And so I think that changes the discussion a little bit too, because I've kind of almost taken a step back from the minutia and from the detail in order to hang on to the grander sense of what's going on in the galaxy and the grander sense of where things are going. I think it was easier to get wrapped up in the minutia back when there wasn't anything else coming out.
Good point. Mm-hmm.
And, but yet there's still that temptation to keep up with all that minutia. So it's weird.
Well, I think the hard part of it now is it's not just that it's new information to get, but you're trying to parse that with stuff you already got in your mind that you've already tucked away. And it's like, well, okay, does this interfere with that? Does it make a difference? So that's where I find the hard part is just trying to keep straight what is real and what's, you know, legend.
Yeah. Are you guys all expanded universe fans of Legends and the current canon, or have you not really picked up the new stuff yet?
That's an excellent question. Chris, would you like to go first?
Yes, I have read very few of the expanded universe novels, and I've attempted current canon novels, and I'm not a fan of most of them. Like, I can name, on two hands, the expanded universe books that I completed and enjoyed. And the only reason I can put them on two hands is because one of them is the Jedi Apprentice series for it's like a young adult type series. And I read multiples of those. So that gets me up to like six or seven. And then I think there was like Shatterpoint. I have the X-Wing novels, which I will read one of these days. And like something, I think maybe the Republic Commando books. But aside from that, wasn't really a fan. And the current stuff, if it has nothing to do with the overall advancement of the saga, like as a whole, and it's not really important, I most likely will not read it.
You hater.
I know.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. What do you think of Empire's End so far? How far through the book are you?
Me?
Yeah.
Or Matt?
No, you, me? Chris.
Oh, I've not picked it up.
You've not picked it up? Well, I say that almost copies. Like I had prior knowledge of that.
Well, you know, he's got to finish the first two books first.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What'd you think of Life Debt?
Start the first two books.
And it was terrible, so.
Yeah, but Life Debt was better, right? You liked it better?
Oh, I have not purchased it.
Chris!
And you call yourself a fan.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. You just said that I love putting Chris on the spot. You just said that you are only interested in reading the new canon novels that further what's going on in the universe somehow, not so much the ones that don't. And yet it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it kind of seems like you've read the opposite. Because arguably, the most important things that have happened in the new canon books as far as the galaxy as a whole have happened in Life Debt and Empire's End.
Mm-hmm. But they are
they tie into the new, you know, storyline.
Yeah.
Yes, but they don't. Like, I'm not missing out on something really big if I don't read.
Like the Battle of Jakku.
I don't care about that. I already know the end solution. So what's the point?
I bet you liked Titanic too.
Luckily,
Watch the prequels?
Yeah, the boat sinks.
Did.
But you knew how they were going to end.
He becomes Darth Vader. Who cares?
Yeah, but they are movies. If Aftermath was a movie, even if I didn't like it, I would watch it.
Okay. So you're
did you read Catalyst?
What's?
Yes, and it was so boring that I had to stop.
Oh my
God. Really?
Yeah, I was so bored.
Are you going to read Tarkin?
No, because I've heard it's boring too. Is there any good book out of the new canon?
Like the derogatory name for, like, you're not a racist, you're not a bigot, but there's like gotta be like for someone whose media selection, that, like the medium or the format for the story, like what? A bookist.
Yeah, what do
that's
we
not
call
really a movieist?
I got a little bit through A New Dawn and enjoyed it, but this was around the time that Rebels was first coming out, so I wasn't well, like, you know, here, as a message to the characters, but I enjoyed what I was reading, so I might go back when Rebels finishes and finish it, since I have a better idea of, you know, who Kanan and Hera are.
Because I'll help Kanan? You. I'll take a little bit of the weight off your shoulders, because I have not been a huge fan of most of the new stuff coming out.
The most I read of something was Heir to the Jedi, ironically enough, because it's considered to be the worst.
I mean,
I don't understand.
When I say
you, Chris.
Read, I take the cheat away and I do audiobooks in the car, so it's a little bit, you know, less strenuous for me to do that. But yeah, I have not been really a huge fan of a lot of the stuff that's been out so far. I think that Empire's End is the best of the three of the Aftermath trilogy. I did really enjoy Bloodlines and Lost Stars.
Yeah, they were good.
Those, I thought, tied into the current storyline, giving you a good foreshadowing what's coming, which I thought was pretty nice.
I started Lost Stars as well, and
again,
as far as I got into it, it was good, but
it doesn't affect anything.
I just get sidetracked.
It doesn't affect... Okay. Matt, help us out here. What do you think of the new canon?
Well, see, this is what I was saying earlier. I love just listening to Star Wars fans go over this stuff, because I don't have anyone to talk to about this. Well, I'm looking at my bookcase right now. I have every hardback or hardcover of the new canon yet to be read. It's just collecting dust.
Yet to be read. You haven't read any of them.
I haven't read any of them. I want to put the legends to bed before I jump into the new canon. But from what you guys have been saying here, and from what I've heard. I heard Bloodline was great, and on Lost Stars, I think the author of that is getting another book to write, isn't she? I thought she got another book deal.
She did Bloodlines and Lost Stars.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Same author. Yep. Maybe that's
Christy Golden.
My bad. Yeah. But I was probably most excited when it comes to the new canon to check out the Aftermath trilogy when I heard about that. Like, oh, trilogy, right on. This is going to be like the Thrawn trilogy of the new canon. And it's
going to
be great.
Oh, we have our sound bite for this episode.
I read the prologue, or just like the first couple of pages, and oh, that poor author. I know he's just gotten destroyed online. No one likes his writing, but I assume it changes or it improves by the time we get to part three.
It does. Here's the thing about that trilogy. And there are some people who have some issues with Chuck Wendig on a personal level as well. I only have kind of a tangential understanding of that, because I don't keep up with anything about him personally. I would probably agree with these people, except I don't keep up with him on a personal level. But the writing, so first of all, the big thing was the expectation was that it was going to give us a lot of insight as to, you know, you had 20 or 30 years of Star Wars book, and now they're all like put on a back burner somewhere else. They still exist, but they don't really count toward this. Here's what you need to know to catch up to The Force Awakens. And we get Aftermath. And Aftermath focuses primarily on, four or five new characters, and doesn't really give us any idea of what's going on in the galaxy at all.
Right. It was a huge letdown.
Right.
as far as the anticipated story.
Anticipated. That's the thing. It's not that the story was bad, though it had some issues. It was that it wasn't what we felt like we were being sold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Life Debt, the second one, those four characters started to come into their own more and integrate with the rest of the galaxy, and we did get a little bit more about what's going on. Separately, we got the Bloodlines novel, and that helped out quite a bit. And now, I'm not done with Empire's End yet, but it's definitely much more relevant to what's going on. Some of the characters that appear in the trilogy have also appeared in other books. The novel with is it A New Dawn, the one with Kanan and Hera?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so Admiral Sloan first appears in that, right?
Yes, I think.
Okay, so one of the main bad guys throughout the current run of canonical books first appears in A New Dawn. So it would be good to read that, and she's kind of an interesting character, I think. But the trilogy, you're going to kind of have to, if you go in with the right expectations for Aftermath, if you can kind of get through the writing style as well, because Chuck Wendig, I read another one of his books prior to reading Aftermath, and it had interesting concepts, and I didn't like the execution of it. And I kind of felt the same way about Aftermath. He also writes in a third-person present tense. Like, he sees them walking across the room. He walks over to them. The panel falls off the wall. "Hey, what are you doing?" this person shouts. Like, it's not. He walked across the room, and the panel fell off the wall. No, it's he walks, the panel falls. It's weird. Mm. So that takes a little bit of getting used to. But
I mean, I think for me, it was more just the fact that it was, you know, not what I expected. And I had to learn new characters, and they tried to tie them into the current characters in the movies and how they're related. And I'm like, okay, now I got this way too much stuff to get in my mind in one book. And I'm trying to accept the fact this isn't what I originally signed on for, too. So it was just a really rough start for the that series of books.
And part of it too, is you don't... Go ahead, Chris.
It was labeled as Journey to the Force Awakens.
Right,
and
right.
We didn't get to the Force Awakens.
It's a slow journey. It's you getting in your car, starting the engine, starting to pull out of the driveway, and then someone else in the car says, "Wait a minute, I forgot such and such." And you have to park the car, go back, unlock the house.
Journey to the Force Awakens that ended 2 years later.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, here's the trilogy, and we're getting at the second book a year later, and the other book two. Wait, what? Mm-hmm. How does that tie into...
Well, it's part of the journey to the... Like, all of the books are the journey to A Force Awakens, not just the trilogy.
I know, but that expectation thing we had, so...
I think part of it was the new characters plus the lack of context. Yeah, Lou, you were talking about, you know, trying to piece together what's going on with new characters and where they fit. The problem is we don't know where the original characters fit anymore. If this were thrown into the old expanded universe, I think it'd be easier to deal with, because we have all of the other puzzle pieces surrounding those pieces. But now, like, we don't even have the border that goes around the jigsaw puzzle complete. So it's harder to... It's like, don't give us new stuff right now. Let us figure out what's going on with the stuff that we already... Like, where is Wedge Antilles? Where, you know, what is Luke doing? How does Luke and Leia's son not end up with Luke... Or with Han and Leia's son not end up with Han and Leia? Like, there are some big questions that we have. We don't have any context.
But that's the thing. It's like this story doesn't answer any of those things.
Right, right.
I mean, I'm not giving spoilers, but it's just, you know, this book was supposed to be leading up to The Force Awakens, and we literally got no answers. Now, obviously a conscious decision on somebody's part to say, this is the story you're going to write, and you're not going to interfere with what we're doing in the movies and how we're going to reveal stuff. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, wham, what a letdown for the fans.
But on the other hand, there's no reason that they have to cram 30 years of chronology into 5 years worth of books, too. So, from a business decision,
I
understand.
I just thought we would have had a storyline that was set closer to the time frame of the movies.
Right.
Because here we are at the end. Well, I don't want to say this without spoiling it, so I won't say it. But, I mean, events that happened lead you to believe that we are ending this way, way before The Force Awakens.
Yeah. And, well, there will be more stuff to fill in there along the way. So, I don't know. I share almost all of your complaints, Lou. And yet, Chris, I think that books two and three in the series are worth reading. Mm-hmm. I think book one is only worth reading so that you get the background on the characters for books two and three, because I think they have grown to be interesting characters. But I get your thoughts too. Why bother reading something if it's not going to matter? But then I guess it matters as much as you want it to matter.
Like, I remember when I saw that Catalyst was coming out and it was the quote-unquote prequel to Rogue One, I was pretty excited about it. But it just got so boring, and it was more technical than I was expecting. And I got probably halfway through it. And then I didn't finish it in time before I saw Rogue One. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting, I'm going to be a little lost when it comes to something after seeing Rogue One, but I wasn't at all.
Right.
So again.
No, Rogue One held together on its own well.
Yeah.
Now, if you wrote a book that told the story of Rogue One and was something that important, I would probably read it and not have an issue with it. But
you see, you're basing your judgment of what's important on how it relates to the movies.
Yes, and that's...
And I think a lot of fans will. But the thing is, the movies aren't the only thing that's important. There are books that tie in together, and the books can be important too. That is part of the universe that can be part of your fandom.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have the movies and only things that help support the movies. There's an entire universe. Admiral Sloan may never appear in the movies, but she's a good character, and the books that help support the building of that character still makes for interesting stories.
Yeah.
So I find it a shame that you're kind of missing out on some good stories.
About Catalyst especially is that you can't have it where you needed to read that book to see the movie.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, the movie has to stand alone by itself. The book can add to that content and make that richer for you to see the movie, which I thought Catalyst did. I didn't read it. I listened to it. I thought it was a pretty good audiobook. It did keep me interested in going on. I wanted to learn the bits and pieces of how the Death Star came together, and I thought it did a pretty good job. Yeah. Did it enhance my viewing of the movie? I don't know. Kind of, you know, maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But if I didn't read the book, I wouldn't have been lost in the movie, obviously.
I didn't care for Catalyst that much. Like, it was okay when I was reading it, I think probably in anticipation of Rogue One, but like looking back, I agree with Chris that it was pretty slow. Like, it was a little painful for me to get through.
Yeah, it was definitely slow. But I thought it gave me some nice context to go into the movie with. I mean, I'm not going to rush out and read it again.
Yeah.
Like some books I have, but...
Yeah. So, Matt, basically, I think when you get to the point where you are at the new canon, there are
good luck.
Yeah. Well, it's
at my rate, I might not get there until episode 9. I mean, I don't know when I'm going to get caught up, but who knows?
That might not be bad, though. That might not be bad, because then you can kind of binge read. I mean, a lot of people coming into the old expanded universe were overwhelmed by the number of books, but you could also kind of pick and choose. And recently, it's like we've just had to get what we get. Like, there's a new book out and we read it because it's the only new content out that we haven't absorbed yet. And frankly, much like the old expanded universe, there are some really, really good books and there are some real stinkers.
Oh yeah.
So we have to read the stinkers too. Whereas if it were the expanded universe, we could, oh, okay, that one wasn't as good. I'll read the good ones. And also the perception is weird too, because it was like, it was okay to diss some of the really bad expanded universe books. And I think it was because you could still be a big expanded universe fan because there were still awesome books. Now it seems like because there are so few books, people are a lot more defensive if you complain about one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's such a weird era we're in too, because I would argue Star Wars is being run by a company that is more secretive than Lucasfilm ever was. I mean, it's not like Lucasfilm would just sort of like blab about what's happening in, you know, episode 2 or episode 3, but I felt like things were less protective than they are now, to the point where I'm so frustrated, actually. And I don't know if you guys have talked about this on the show. I'm really interested in where the new trilogy is going, Force Awakens and Last Jedi and whatnot, but I was so disappointed at the end of The Force Awakens. Not the main complaint, which is, oh, it's just a repeat of Star Wars. I didn't really see that so much as there were just way too many question marks for me in that movie. Not logistically, but story-wise. And like, well, who's this person? Where do they come from? Who's their parents? And what's the state of the galaxy? Wait, that was the capital that got blown up? Like, when was that established? I was just so confused as to what really where I was and what the rules were and whatnot. So I'm kind of waiting for some kind of book or trilogy or something to really explore those 30 years between Jedi and, or I'm sorry, Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Just so I can understand this new this new trilogy a little bit better. And maybe they're holding the cards close to their chest because they're just paranoid that people won't go to their movie if they know the answers.
But, well, you know, that's interesting that you say that. I want to come back to the secrecy thing here in a minute, but looking at the actual content, a lot of people were lost by The Force Awakens. And it's funny too, because there are also a lot of very vocal people complaining about how it's just a ripoff of A New Hope. And I keep thinking, all of the locations were new, from Hosnian Prime to Starkiller Base to Jakku to Octo, like everywhere was new. The alien races were new. Maz Kanata, I'd say 95% of the aliens in her bar. With the exception of Han and Leia, who were, I mean, they had very little screen time, especially Leia. I mean, Han was in the back half of the film. Admiral Ackbar made an appearance. Nynum made an appearance. But, like, otherwise, there was just nothing familiar there. So you almost had to have some of those references to still make it feel like some continuity from Star Wars. We didn't go back and revisit any existing locations. There weren't any features of, not primary features of aliens that we were already familiar with. So it was a little harder, again, to get that context. It almost felt like you were on like the absolute far reaches of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And we've also complained before about the fact that Star Wars in the past has felt like, you know, it's all happening right around the corner. Like, everybody knows everybody, and they do need to expand a little bit. But I think maybe they expanded a little bit too far, and it was a little tough to kind of figure out where you're at and what's going on. I agree with you there. And I want to come back and ask you a little bit about what, like, where you think things are going in the future and where you'd like to see things go with 8 and 9. We won't talk books because you haven't caught up on those yet, but at least episodes 8 and 9, we can probably do that. But the current regime, if you will, being more secretive than the former Lucasfilm, I'm curious about that, because we've also gotten a lot more interaction from social media. We have Pablo Hidalgo helping with clarifications for things, with shooting down a lot of fan theories. Some people have argued that there's been more out of Lucasfilm than there has been in the past. And yet I can kind of see the flip side of that too a little bit, but like, how, in what ways, just if you could clarify for some of the people listening, in what way do you feel that they're maybe being a little more secretive and holding their cards a little closer to the chest than they used to?
Well, I think I'm mainly thinking of how The Force Awakens was handled, and that might have had more to do with JJ and maybe the anxiety releasing the first movie in this new era of Star Wars. You know, they didn't really know what to do, and maybe things have changed. I don't really keep up with my social media as much as I should.
Yeah, you're not missing much.
Well, like with Pablo and anyway, I don't know if Leland Chi posts stuff, but just having some kind of relationship on social media with someone from Lucasfilm that definitely wasn't around during the prequel era. But I got a lot of thrill back during the prequels of they had this thing during Attack of the Clones, which sounds so dumb now, but at the time it was awesome. Every Wednesday they released like an image from filming, and it was sometimes hidden. Like, sometimes it was just like the corner of a table. Mm-hmm. One time it was like a blurred shot of like Hayden Christensen running through Coruscant. And to me, that little tease, that little, you know, morsel each week was so thrilling that my mind just went to crazy places and was kind of helped occupy my time until the movie's release. And I don't know why. I'm waiting. Like, we get the title drop for the Last Jedi, which is awesome. But like, I'm just itching for some behind the scenes stuff, like a little bit more relationship on a large scale level, not just Pablo's Twitter account, but, you know, between Lucasfilm, Disney, and the fans. And maybe I'm totally out of touch with the way things are now, but I'm just not feeling that kind of I don't know, that way that like StarWars.com used to run things back during the prequels. again, maybe way off here, but it's just sort of like the overall vibe I'm feeling. Also, I know how protective the actors, like, they couldn't say anything before The Force Awakens came out. It's almost like the less that the actors and Disney might, like, talk about the movie now, the bigger, like, the hype becomes. And for some reason, for me, it can sometimes be a bigger letdown for some reason. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. See that. I don't know. It's hard to specify. The fact that I'm just not as involved as a Star Wars fan, I think might have something to do with that. But
well, and I think that the types of involvement too. I remember back with the prequels, they used to have a webcam that they would.
That too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do on StarWars.com. But I do remember with Phantom Menace things being a little tighter.
I'm sorry. Has anything come out regarding The Last Jedi other than, you know, that first shot? You know.
Officially or unofficially?
Officially.
Officially.
They had that production teaser, but that's about it.
Some costume, right. Some costume stuff.
I mean, I go to Star Wars Leaks, you know, on Reddit sometimes just to like find something.
There's been quite a bit that's been leaked, like, you know, spoilers that have come out. Nothing like super critical plot wise. But
it's also an interesting era too. I'm all over the place, but you know, having all these movies stacked back to back each year, I think it just creates this interesting pacing, because with you know, the prequels, for example, I mean, you had 3 years between each movie, and it's like, usually the first year was a little dull, you know, nothing going on, but then production would gear up, and then I don't know, maybe they were able to release stuff more strategically, whereas nowadays it's like, no, you have to wait till Celebration to get a teaser. You have to wait to these points. And I don't know, it's
I think they did that to keep the fan involvement alive though, and maybe they needed to do that then, because again, it was 3 years between films. And now, like, not only do we, I mean, we were starting to get some stuff on Episode 8 while we were still waiting for Rogue One to come out. Mm-hmm. And now Episode 8's in post-production, and they're working on the Han Solo film. So there are two films simultaneously being worked on at any given point in time. And there's that overlap. The way social media works now is, again, it's different from back in the prequels. I think that Star Wars maybe had to be a little more proactive to get the information out, whereas the internet now can basically do what they did with Phantom Menace before it came out. They did not have to spend very much on promotional stuff for the Phantom Menace because every magazine in the world wanted Star Wars on the front cover. I don't know if you remember, like, the 2-page spreads in Vanity Fair, Entertainment Weekly, like, everybody wanted Star Wars. So it's like, well, you don't have to pay them to put stuff out. I mean, basically they'll pay you to get something to put in their magazine because they know it's going to sell. Now it's kind of the same thing with the internet. It feels to me like back in, you know, 10 or more years ago, 15 years ago, they had to push things a little more. And now there are so many people trying to pull things out of them that they don't have to take the same strategy. They don't have to use the same tactics.
Total sense. I totally see it now. It still doesn't mean I'm not itching, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
On Last Jedi. I was getting back to what I was saying about Force Awakens, I was just left with so many question marks, you know, not just like wait, is Vader really Luke's father? Not that kind of question mark. More like, all right, like, how did Maz get the lightsaber? Just all these questions I had. Who's Snoke? All these things. And to me, that felt very frustrated. I mean, and I was a diehard Lost fan, you know, for the 6 years.
Awesome.
And I enjoyed all those mysteries and whatnot. But now I'm just getting a little impatient. I'm really itching for some Last Jedi news. I assume you guys are pretty confident we'll get something at Celebration, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get something.
If we don't, people will riot.
Basically. I think the opening ceremonies at Celebration will definitely have some kind of significant reveal for episode 8, whether it be, we might even get a teaser before that, but this could be a full trailer, or we will see something on the same lines as the equivalent of BB-8 coming out on stage. There'll be some major thing to help appease the fans there. But you know, you're right. The Force Awakens did bring up a lot of questions, did not give hardly any answers. And if you look back at the other trilogies, A New Hope had a lot of closure to it, because at the time they thought it was going to be the only film.
Right.
The Phantom Menace had closure to it, and it didn't give a lot of extra answers, but it also didn't present a lot of extra questions. So it was a little bit different too. And now The Force Awakens, we're moving forward. The future can go in any direction. We didn't have that with The Phantom Menace. The future was going to go in a very clearly defined direction, which was going to culminate in Anakin turning to the dark side, Ben becoming a hermit on Tatooine, and Yoda going to Dagobah, and Luke and Leia being born and separated from one another. Like, we knew exactly how episode 3 was going to end when we saw the opening crawl of Phantom Menace. But we don't now with this new trilogy. It can go literally anywhere. So the fact that there were so many things unresolved, I think, felt especially frustrating. And I think that they will resolve those things in episode 8 and 9. And there will be some questions that will be left to the expanded universe. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that if they're of lesser consequence. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting seeing where things go. Which I want to ask you about next, but are you going to Celebration?
I'm not, unfortunately. What are the dates again?
It's around the 15th of April. I don't have a calendar in front of me to know exactly. It's going to be that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Well, I think it's 13th through 16th, maybe.
That sounds right.
I think so, yep.
Well, gosh, even if I wanted to go, I'm unfortunately going to be out of town. I'm going to be in L.A., so it would have been great. It's in Florida.
Oh, you're on the wrong coast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoot. So if we were back in Anaheim, maybe I could have made it. But last time, it would have been 2 years ago. I think they had a streaming event where the guy from Entertainment Weekly, Anthony Bresnikan, is that his name? I think he came out and did like a panel, and they showed the Chewie We're Home trailer, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, I was watching that from my living room, and it was fantastic. So hopefully there's another opportunity like that to watch it. But I'll tell you guys, like, I have that phase between Sith and the Disney acquisition. I didn't have the pull to go to Celebration the way I used to, because, you know, with like a new movie coming out, it was just so exciting.
Right.
And I've been itching to go ever since Force Awakens Celebration. Yeah, just itching to go.
I tell you what, I went to Anaheim, and I also went to Celebration 3, the one that you went to in Indianapolis. Night and day difference.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was much larger, way, way larger. There were 5 different panel halls going on simultaneously at any given time.
Oh.
And that's aside from the podcast stage, that's aside from some of the other, like the Droid Builders Club had their own area. They would do presentations and stuff kind of internally. But as far as actual panel rooms, there were 6?
There were a lot.
It's so 7. Funny looking back at Indianapolis in 2005, or maybe 2002, it's like, you could just walk up to Rick McCallum and talk to him. And yeah. Like, I remember Billy Dee getting pushed through in a wheelchair, like just like casually going through. And it's like,
yeah,
such a weird setting. I'm sure it's so much more intense than it used to be.
You get a little bit of that now, because I remember being in line behind Pablo for like 3 hours in the store. We had exhibitor badges, so we got into the Celebration store the night before it opened, because they figure if you're an exhibitor, otherwise you're not going to get to attend the store at all, because the lines there are crazy. There were points where you could, like, we were walking down the sidewalk. I think, Lou, you were with me, and Chris might have been with us behind Leland Chi.
Yeah.
Right.
We didn't approach him because it's like, you know, we don't want to be that guy. Like, we, you know, poor guy's like on his way to supper. Just let him, you know, he's outside the convention hall. We'll let him go. But you still get a little bit of that, but those guys are now a lot of them are so busy and doing different types of panels and such that it's well, plus Pablo's kind of become a celebrity unto himself.
Yeah.
So now I think even more so than in Anaheim, that's going to be a bigger deal. I think a lot of them now, you know, they move around through the back hallways and stuff like that. Some of them have handlers. It's a lot bigger than Indy was.
Do you have to wait? Like, are there chances like you won't get into panels because there'll be such a big line?
Actually, yes. No. Well, really, in Anaheim, I didn't feel like that.
There were a few. The Star Wars Rebels panel got capped off. The screenings got capped off. And I think the stuff that was in the main hall that wasn't the opening and closing panels could be capped off too.
I think the opening ceremony was, there was a line for the main hall for that, but then it was also being streamed to 4 other stages. So the line for that was a little more manageable unless you really wanted to get into the live stage where it was being conducted. But that stage was huge too. That was massive. Yeah. We went to the Rogue One panel on Sunday morning and there were all kinds of, it felt like it was packed, but when you actually got up and looked around and then looked up in the balcony, it was maybe 2/3 full.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy. And we waited like, I think it was under an hour in line for that. And even then, like I said, we could have gotten in and still had no problem getting seats.
So do you think this new celebration is going to be even bigger than The Force Awakens? Like, is that the general consensus or?
I think the attendance will be higher because I think after the success of The Force Awakens, I think it will bring, I think the fandom has grown. And I think that we will see a bigger attendance at this celebration. I think the screenings, as Chris said, those will continue to be like really, really tough to get into. If they do the 3D screenings again of the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, those will get capped. If they do any premieres for Rebels for upcoming seasons, those would probably get capped. If they do a screening for anything else coming up, that'll get capped. But other than that, I don't remember anything really, like, people being turned away for anything. Even, like, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, Ian McDiarmid, their stage shows. The lines were a little long for those. But I don't think they were, like, really blocked out.
Yeah, I went to a few of those, and I don't recall them being completely full, so.
Yeah, so it's not as bad as people would think. I don't think it's anywhere near as difficult as something like New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con. And I think a lot of the reason why is because Celebration, like I said, they had, I guess, 7 stages now that I'm looking at stuff going on simultaneously. There was always something Star Wars related you could go do. And New York Comic Con, I don't care about My Little Pony. I don't care about, I know there's a lot of good anime out there. It's just not something I have a lot of exposure to. So I don't care about anything anime related. So I kind of felt like that's, you know, 25% of New York Comic Con right there. There's a whole slew of things that I'm not that interested in. And the things that I am interested in that are really popular are also, like, the overlap for the Marvel stuff is incredible. And the Marvel panels are really hard to get into. But at Celebration, if I don't get into the Mark Hamill presentation, I could go to the James Arnold Taylor one, or I could go to the Ian McDiarmid one, or I could skip them entirely and just go shop for Star Wars stuff, or see the presentation on the upcoming Battlefront game, which is a big deal at the Anaheim one because it wasn't released yet. There's always something going on that you can do. So I guess it didn't feel like everybody was trying to pour into just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
There were enough diverse interests and things were spread out in enough different directions.
Nice.
So it really wasn't that bad. It seemed, Lou, you've been to both New York Comic Con and Celebration. Do you feel like they're a little bit different in that regard, or how would you look at it? Or is Lou muted? Please tell me he's muted. Or fell asleep, one of the two. We lost Lou. Wow. Okay.
Where can he be?
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. I'll keep talking.
I went to New York Comic Con.
I did too.
Okay. Well, okay. But Matt, you haven't done a recent celebration to compare it to, though.
Sorry. Yeah, that's a good point.
But Chris, would you say that that's fairly accurate, though, that because of the nature of the interests, there's a little bit difference in the line? Like, to me, the lines in New York Comic Con were insane.
Yeah. The, I'm trying to think. I mean, they did the way that lines were handled, when I went in October was that it was different than the way they did it in Anaheim. Just because you had the tap your badge system, if you and you'd preserve a spot in line, and you could go do whatever, and then come back later, and you wouldn't lose a spot. But I, in general, yes, lines were a lot worse then. But I would really talk more about the show floor and like the general walking around at Anaheim. I was not at all overwhelmed, and I'm not a claustrophobic person by any means, but at New York, I definitely felt the sense of like, there's a whole bunch of people around me and it makes me kind of nervous. And
yeah,
it's a very different experience in that regard. I think overall lines though, they're a little bit longer for some things at New York, depending the popularity of the panel and the topic of it. But for the most part, it's pretty comparable, I'd say.
Yeah. All right. We are actually going to cover Celebration in our upcoming episodes here. We've got a breakdown of how to select panels, how to prioritize your time, what to bring, what not to bring, things like that. Kind of looking forward to it. Kind of getting in the mood now. But before we wrap up, Matt, I want to know from you, looking forward to episodes 8 and episodes 9, no spoilers, spoiler free. Is there anything that you really want to see resolved that's really important to you? Or do you have any speculation on where they might take things going forward? We've made speculations before, but like I'm of the opinion that they're going to kill Luke. I had the opinion that they were going to do it in episode 8, though with Carrie Fisher passing on, some of that, like they might have changed some things around. I know that there are some rumors now that they actually are changing some of Carrie's scenes in episode 8. What's your take on things going forward with the two films?
Right. Well, I think just the elephant in the room, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it, is with the passing of Carrie Fisher.
Right.
You know, what is changing in this movie? And I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard you guys talk about this. I always thought, honestly, that we were going to lose, as you kind of said, we were going to lose a character, a major original trilogy character in each movie, culminating not necessarily with Leia dying in episode 9, but, you know, having this be all about Leia. Because, you know, I mean, let's be honest, like Han Solo, fan favorite, you know, most Star Wars fans, I assume, are boys or men, you know, they probably identify with Luke. I personally would have loved to see Leia, you know what I mean? The non-Jedi, the politician, you know, the smartest one out of the group, basically make it to the end, or maybe this whole trilogy rest on her shoulders.
Right.
And also, I think there's something to be said about her relationship with Ben. Now that Han is gone. But yeah, with Carrie Fisher's passing, it just totally throws everything up in the air, to the point where I think I think Luke needs to be in episode 9 personally for this to have a I don't know, as a handoff, because I don't believe Carrie Fisher filmed anything for episode 9, right?
That seems to be correct.
Okay. Did you guys talk about like how they might handle her, like her passing? Like,
yeah,
any like overall theories you have? Or,
well, there are three things they can do. They can have her die off screen. They can have her live off screen and just continue. They can recast her, or they could do CGI. And of those three things I just listed, I know there are four. Math is not my strong suit. So, point is, we feel like recasting her is a big no-no. I don't think anybody's really going to go for that. Having her die off screen and just kind of writing in like some character walks in, oh, have you heard? The princess just died or something like that just kind of feels superficial. So we kind of agreed that, I mean, CG now is good enough as we've seen that we could at least have her in a scene that would facilitate her dying or her being written off into a different direction. However, shortly after we discussed it, Lucasfilm said that they have no plans to use CGI
right.
for Carrie, even though apparently Carrie was very happy with what was done in Rogue One. But so now it looks like I don't think they're going to recast her. So I think what's going to happen is they are probably going to redo some of the scenes in Episode 8 to help accommodate her just not being present in Episode 9. Or maybe she's on a ship and the ship is destroyed, causing her to die on screen but not on camera. I know that's not.
Do you think that her? Let's say they. Hopefully, this isn't too like morbid of a subject for the podcast.
Well, it's a popular subject. I mean, morbid right. or not, and, we kind of have to talk about it.
Right, and I was thinking if. Story-wise, if you have to write out a character in a sense, someone's status of Leia, I don't think it makes any sense for her to still be alive in the galaxy and not be in Episode 9. I mean, unless there's like, I mean, that's kind of like what they did right. with Han, right, in Empire. You know, they froze him in case Harrison didn't want to come back. I think that's how the story goes.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Just totally inappropriate, I think, due to the circumstances, just to have her frozen or whatever. But
right.
With any kind of rewrites, I wonder if it would be somewhat... tactless. If they were to kill her off, would they do it at the end of Episode 8? Maybe that's too soon. Maybe that completely changes the story that they were planning to tell. But I just don't understand how you would write her character out in Episode 9 without ever showing her and have it really make sense. I love the idea, and this is before Lucasfilm made that statement, how they'll never... recreate Carrie Fisher with CGI. I loved the idea of her having a conversation with Luke via hologram in mm-hmm. Episode 9 and having her ship explode or planet. Somehow she perishes. Because
right.
I love the idea of Luke meeting her or seeing her at least for the first time via hologram and the last time he sees her via hologram. I always thought that was kind of like a beautiful, you know.
Interesting. Sort of,
That would be wonderful symbolism. I've never thought about that, but that I would like probably start crying in the theater if that happens.
You know what I mean? Like yeah, it would have been great, but it's a good idea. Can they, you know, sorry for the term, but can they execute it that way? Right. You know, is it something that Lucasfilm is willing to do? Probably not, but
I mean, that's better than a CG recreation of her.
Right. Probably. And I think it's also a way with, cause I wasn't entirely sold on the CGI Leia in Rogue One. I actually was one of the maybe few fans. I know a lot of people didn't like Tarkin. I thought Tarkin looked fantastic. Leia was the one I had more troubles with mainly cause mm-hmm. it was so brightly lit and it was so unexpected too. But,
and see for yeah, me, I felt the opposite. We all had mixed opinions on that one here on the show.
So. Right. Right. Which, and totally fair point. You know what I mean? But yeah. If they were to do her hologram, I think there's some, you know, some wiggle room in there for it not to come off as the challenge isn't as big as, you know, a non-hologram recreation.
Right. Well, I mean, they have to do something to kill her off because you can't have her ride off into the sunset. She's Leia. She doesn't do that. She gets involved.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not going to leave, with, however, the state of the galaxy is going to be at the end of Episode 9 or 8 and the beginning of Episode 9. She is not going to not be involved. So therefore, you have to, I really hate to say it this way, but you have to kill the character off if you're not going to be able to continue with the actor. Excuse me, actress. I use the generic term Carrie preferred actress, and so you, if you're not going to do the CG, you have to kill her. You can't actually have her be seen dying on the screen. So you almost have to do the, like you said, the planet she's on being blown up or the ship that she's on being blown up. And I really like that hologram idea with, you know, kind of bookending the beginning of and end of Luke and Leia's experience together.
Mm-hmm. And even if, I don't know, if I don't think it works that way, but do astromech droids project live holograms or are they just recorded holograms? I don't know.
They should you be able to. Some, I mean, yeah. the projection itself is the same, really. It's just the technology of the transmission. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I if know, you they're... could have R2 be the one to actually project the hologram on top of that, that would be even better.
Hmm.
But with there's just so many questions and who knows. I do know that Disney, I think, will handle it in the best way possible because it's a horrible situation for Star Wars fans and the producers and everyone involved, you right. know, to be missing out on Carrie Fisher really completing, which I think a lot of us felt was going to be, you know, her heavily featured in episode 9.
Yeah.
But I wonder if. Like, really, what is this new trilogy's story? You know, you had Anakin in the Clone Wars, and then you had Luke and Vader. And now, like, what is this one all about? And it seems like a lot of the... We don't have much information to go off of. And I think we're really going to learn in this next movie, of course, what this whole trilogy is about. And as we learn more about Ben and Rey and Snoke's involvement with Luke's training and whatnot, like, just what went down all those years ago.
Right.
And I don't know if this is a popular theory, but it's the one that I've heard of, and I say makes sense. I would love it if, in a Empire Strikes Back fashion, you know, as Luke would be tempted to go fight Vader, there would be some situation with Rey and Kylo, and their roles would be reversed, maybe, or ultimately, Rey would basically turn dark at the end of Last Jedi, and the third one is about her redemption, and maybe Kylo has to be the one to redeem her. I don't know, just kind of flipping things upside down in a sense.
That would be an interesting,
really ballsy for Disney to do. You know, turn this you know
right.
Heroine into the villain.
But from a literary point of view, I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who would. Be against that just in the sense that, you know, we finally get a strong female lead on screen and right. now we're going to vilify her and have, you know, once again, the man has to come yeah. in and save her. I totally understand that. And I agree with it. The flip side of it is from a literary point of view, regardless of the sex or gender of the character, it's something that hasn't really been done with a lead protagonist really falling to the dark side and Luke was being tempted, but it never really happened. Anakin did, but really Anakin was the setup for the Vader villain. So we've not really seen, and we've also not seen a villain kind of on their own start to regret their decisions and really come in and save the day. You could argue Finn was that, but that was kind of a little bit quick. It wasn't real. Finn wasn't really a villain. Finn was a rank and file soldier who the backstory is never really wanted to be doing that stuff in the first place. He always kind of had an objection to the level of violence that he ended up having to be involved in. We don't see someone like Kylo Ren coming in and changing his point of view on things and then going and choosing redemption actively as opposed to, I mean, Vader did, but it was kind of a last minute thing. Do you know, I might not be making any sense here, but
no, you totally are. I mean, well, Kylo's being pulled by the light in the way that Anakin was pulled by the darkness. You know what I mean? So, and it felt like fate for Anakin to go dark. It almost feels, for me at least, rewatching Force Awakens, like that Ben Kylo will ultimately come back to the light in some way. But
yeah,
it's funny because, you know, on one hand, when Lucas was running Star Wars, it was very, I don't want to say it was simple, like in a bad way, but it just had these very, you know, large thematic beats. And with this new Disney movie, I wonder if they're going to stick to that, you know, this idea of larger, more obvious themes, or if they're right. going to make it more, you know, complex and more intricate than a Star Wars movie typically is.
Well, it's hard because the way we consume a lot of our entertainment now is we want those complex characters. We don't want a villain who's ultimately evil. We want a villain who we can relate to and we can see a little bit of ourselves in it. And like, we want more of the shades of gray than we do the black and white. So that's a really interesting premise. We've talked a little bit about how the prequels were a lot more shades of gray. You know, you've got tortured heroes, you've got relatable villains like with Anakin. To some extent, if you get into the EU backstory of it, you could argue Count Dooku, stuff like that. Whereas the original trilogy, it was Luke was good. He was morally good, if not a little, you know, bit whiny and immature at times. Leia was ultimate good. Vader was ultimate evil, and the Emperor was ultimate evil. So there were
simpler times.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that's the thing. George Lucas was very much about those traditional themes and myths that go back for centuries and centuries. Now, we've kind of muddied the waters with a lot of our storytelling and the morality in our storytelling. We kind of look at morality as something that shouldn't be imposed on other people and it shouldn't be so clear-cut because there's always a what-if scenario mm-hmm. when it comes to moral decisions. And so I think that, and look at video games, the video games that are more narrative-based, whether it be the Telltale game series or whether it be Mass Effect. They put you, part of the game is putting you in a tough decision and seeing which way you go morally. And it's interesting to see how that type of story is different for us now than it used to be for generations past. What direction is Disney going to go with this? I think that they're probably going to stick with more complex moral ambiguities. And, with a little bit darker spin on the storytelling than Lucas probably would have.
What do you guys think is the, I mean, just on like that subject matter, and I don't mean to keep going forever here.
No,
but
it's all good.
The one thing that actually stands out the most to me in The Force Awakens, and it's, I think it says a lot about what we're going to get between Luke and Rey, and ultimately could be a huge turning point in the entire like trilogy and maybe how we look at the Luke character as a whole. What do you think his face was really saying at the end of Force Awakens when Rey holds out her lightsaber? Again, we don't have that much info to go off of, but do you think Luke is just feeling simply regret for what happened? Do you think he knows Rey and he has some maybe some horrible stuff to tell her?
The only thing I saw in his face at the time was, crap, what was my line again?
Or why did I eat those nachos? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Seriously, Chris, Lou, any thoughts?
I don't know. I've always wanted to say that he knows her and he feels bad about why he's done what he's done. But you know, that's just kind of me reading into it, obviously. So, I mean, I hope we get a real dark story about what happened to Luke and why he's there. I mean, why else would you go to a secluded area where no one can get in contact with you when you haven't been in contact with anybody, any of your family or friends for the last 20 or 30 years? Mm-hmm. I mean, something bad must have happened. Mm-hmm. And I think it's his regret that's on his face right there. Mm-hmm. Either that or he's like, is she pulling a weapon out? Let me kill her right now.
I agree with you, Lou. I think that some of what we see is obviously regret, but I think some of it too could be him saying, because I feel like, at least based on, again, the very little that we know of what happened, I feel like he's felt like personal loneliness. And I think seeing someone able to, you know, go on this big journey to find him and bring him back, of all things, his lightsaber, I think it's a sense of relief, too, that he's not alone and that whatever comes next in his own personal life, he doesn't have to do it, like, by himself. And it was almost like he was thankful that Rey kind of like passed a test and got to where he is. And now that they can fight whatever is, you know, they're going to have to fight together and he doesn't have to be alone. Because if you're by yourself for what? I think they said 10 years. I mean, that's going to take a toll on you at some point.
Especially after what happened with the Knights of Ren.
Yeah. So I think that's part of it is regret, but it's also a little bit of relief too.
I saw it as a kind of a tragic gratitude, but sadness for what's to come. Like, I kind of feel like he's standing there in front of Rey. She brings him his lightsaber. She, as you said, passed a test, but he knows that now she's going to be walking down a road that's going to be difficult for her, as it was for him, because he's been there. And so I think he's grateful for the companionship, and he's grateful that there's someone that he can train, perhaps, after having failed his other students. But knowing what she's inevitably going to have to face and the trials that are to come, I think there's a resignation on his face that he, like, it's sad.
I don't know. I agree with all you guys. I mean, it's such a hard, I doubt even Mark Hamill knew, you know what I mean? What
right.
What the direction was. I'm sure JJ had some advice, but it's ambiguous enough where we could really, you know, Rian Johnson could write whatever he wants and it would work. But I guess what I'm saying, despite agreeing with you all, is I have this odd feeling like there's going to be, I can't think of a good movie to really draw a parallel to other than, you know, the original trilogy and how, you know, Ben didn't give Luke the whole story. You know, what if, you know, Luke starts training her and brings Rey, you know, into his fold, and there's that love and respect between a master and their apprentice. But I don't know, something gets revealed down the way that makes Rey feel betrayed by Luke, or I don't know. I mean, Luke handled that news from Ben pretty well on Dagobah, you know, about like, yeah, your father turned to the dark side and
yeah,
you know, all this stuff, you know, different point of view is pretty much all he you know, he's frustrated with. But I just wonder if Luke is scared of, okay, I have to train this girl, and do I tell her, you know, what went down all those years ago?
That's a really good point. I think that a big part of the hero's journey, and really of any person's journey, is having to deal with the fact that someone that you care about has betrayed you. I mean, we all, at some point in our lives, go through that, and that's one of the most difficult things that we have to get over in our lives. And so I think that it would, you know, the whole thing you said earlier about the possibility of Rey falling to the dark side, what if it's that she learns who left her on Jakku and has a confrontation with them and realizes that their reasoning for leaving them on Jakku sucked, and that they weren't ever going to come back for her, and that she spent her whole life. I mean, that was such an important character point with her in The Force Awakens that I could see them using that as part of the sense of betrayal. Now, whether Luke was involved in that or not, we don't know. There seems to be, Kylo Ren seems to know who she is to some extent. Han definitely gives every impression that he knows who she is.
Oh, you think so?
I think so.
Interesting. And the rest of you guys think so too?
Lou?
I feel like he has an idea or a suspicion. Whether or not he knows for sure is debatable, but I feel like he at least might have an idea.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think he knows who she is too.
Okay, so that means that sorry, you guys have probably covered this.
I don't think we've really talked that much about this.
No, I don't think so either, yeah.
So when you walked out of Force Awakens, and please cut me off if I'm going on too long. When you walked out of Force Awakens, were you like my wife and everyone else I saw the movie with who were like, oh yeah, Luke's her dad?
No.
Because I wasn't. I never thought he was her dad.
I considered it, but I think if she's related to any of the main cast or secondary characters, I hold true that she's a Kenobi.
Okay, right.
Right.
Hence why you're Ben or Obi-Wan's voice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, the Kenobi connection would make more sense and it would make for a better story. And I think part of it is if she's Luke's daughter, then there's a whole slew of questions that, you know, why did Luke give her up? Who took her to Jakku and left her there? Why Luke must have been able to sense the Force in her, so why would he not have trained her with the other students? Why would he have left her with someone as bad as Unkar Plot, et cetera, et cetera? In addition to the fact that it seems kind of a tired way to go with the story.
Of course.
Like, not everybody can be in the same family.
Oh, of course. And so when this whole like Obi-Wan Kenobi thing kind of cropped up, I thought, well, that's interesting. But, you know, age-wise, there would have to be some generation between Obi-Wan and Rey, right?
Exactly. It'd have to be her granddaughter.
Right. So that probably feels like an easier thing to kind of like fill in through exposition or whatnot. Like, yes, Obi-Wan had a sibling or not a sibling. Obi-Wan had a daughter or son and yada, yada. But,
Yeah, it's got to be. It's not Luke. It's not. I think this is where they're finally going to take the lineage and move it off somewhere else. Yes, she will be an apprentice of Luke's, and so the storyline, the Skywalker saga will continue, but she's not a Skywalker.
Kylo Ren is, of course,
yes.
Technically, in a sense. So that kind of works.
And it would not surprise me if Kylo Ren survives this trilogy.
For sure.
I don't think he's going to be the Emperor or the Vader. I don't think there's going to be a big sacrifice that he makes at the end that's going to culminate in his own life. If anything, it could be that he inadvertently causes the sacrifice of someone else, which could even be the turning point for him. I think he's going to survive episode 9.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That would be cool. That I'm thinking in my head now of all three of our heroes right now, those being Rey, Finn, and Poe surviving, and then Kylo turning good, and then just the four of them going on adventures for post episode 9. That would be fun.
With Chewie and all the droids.
Exactly.
All right. I think we probably better wrap it up there. We're going on an hour and a half here. And I hate to do it because I think it's been a good discussion. A lot of different stuff here. So, Matt, we are going to have you back on again.
I got to say, guys, like, seriously, this has been, like, a huge help. Like, just with my understanding where fandom is, you guys have filled me in on so much great stuff here. And I would love to chat with you guys again if you'll have me on.
Absolutely.
So, thanks again.
I'm just flattered that for once we helped someone's mental health instead of, became a detriment to it. So that's odd for us. We're not used to that. All right. So we're going to wrap it up here. Matt, where can people find you online? Give us your social media. Give us an address we can find the podcast, et cetera.
For sure. Well, the podcast is pretty easy to find. We're on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. I'm not on Facebook personally, but I am on Twitter. I'm not sure if my does that happen where people aren't sure where you can find them.
We've had that happen before. Yeah.
I don't know if you can give me a minute here. Chris, you actually messaged me on Twitter, so you should know maybe.
Let's see.
Oh, I got it. I'm so sorry. It's The Sky Was Opened.
Yes.
The Sky Was Opened, which is a Twilight Zone reference. But
awesome. Okay.
There you go.
All right. And the podcast, again, is Seincast, S-E-I-N, yes. Cast.
Yeah, it's not a very creative name. And believe it or not, I did rip off probably the Force Cast way back when.
That's okay. So. Hey, listen, it's very specific. You hear Seincast, and it's very easy to figure out what it's about, and that's important. Branding is important. So all right. Well, we want to thank you for joining us on the show. Been a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot, guys.
I'll go ahead and bring us out of the episode here. We don't really have show notes up in front of us, but you can send us feedback on this episode, any of the things we talked about, and I know there's a lot of stuff, But I think, you know, we covered some kind of important aspects of fandom as well as speculation on the future. So we want to hear what you guys think out there. Send us an email at echobase@randomchatter.com, or you can find us online, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. Our podcast Twitter account for EchoBase is EchoBase Podcast. The main network is at Random Chatter. I am at Eric Blythe. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E. Chris, where can we find you on Twitter?
I'm at The Curse of Chris.
All right. And Lou?
And I'm at Lou Secki. That's L-O-U-S-E-C-K-I.
All right. You can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. If you're not familiar with the network, I want to point out we also have a Star Wars news show called The Outer Rim, and we have a Rebels show called Ghost Stories. I highly recommend both of them primarily because I am not on them, so they are not tainted by
not your responsibility.
Well, that too. Yeah, which, you know, all the better. Makes for a better show, right? So check those out, randomchatter.com. We would love it if you would give us some reviews wherever you're getting this podcast, whether it be iTunes or somewhere else. Tell your friends about us. You can listen live on Tuesday nights, though I do want to point out that for the rest of the month of March, it's going to be a little hit and miss. I'm the one that actually does the live production stuff, and I'm going to be out of town for most of the rest of the month. So we will be recording. We may still do a live audio stream only, in which case we would go back to Ustream to do that. We'll keep you posted. But normally, Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time, we do record live. RandomChatter.com/live, you can get it there. Or if you go on to Twitch at twitch.tv, follow the Random Chatter Network account. And that should also give you notifications anytime we go live. We're also going to be continuing to do some gaming stuff there. We're going to be bringing back our community gaming night. We've got a lot of stuff planned for Twitch going forward, so check that out. Also, we want to give a shout out to everybody who's helped support us on Patreon. Patreon.com/randomchatter. Everybody who donates to the network, no matter how big or little, everyone gets access to our Slack team, our Slack community, which is... it's a lot of fun. It's a big hit. It's one of the few things that keeps me going through the day, and I mean that. So thank you to everybody who has and who's been participating there. And, you know, a link for people who want to participate, again, patreon.com/randomchatter. I'm starting to trip over my words here. It's been a long day. The music you hear in this episode at the top of the episode is The Imperial March, as done by Cell Dweller, which you can find on Amazon and iTunes. It's very cool. And that's it. We are going to close the blast doors. Once again, thank you to Matt for joining us on the show. We will catch everybody next week. Until then, take care.
The Force will be with you always.